Good morning to you. It's Peter McVerry sitting in here for Frank Mitchell. You're very welcome to U105. It's just after 9 o'clock. I'll be with you until 12 today and tomorrow. And our first guest now joining me is Sarah Mason. Sarah is the interim CEO of Women's Aid. Sarah, good morning. How
Hello.
Are you?
Good morning, Peter. Good morning.
Yep, Sarah, lovely to have you on the programme. Thank you for making the time to speak to us. Now, you're talking to us this morning because Women's Aid are launching their children's strategy up at the Long Gallery at Stormont later this morning, actually in the next half hour. Can you give us a bit of a headline, Sarah, on the strategy and what it is you're hoping to achieve with this launch?
Absolutely. I mean, one of our main strap lines is often the biggest victims of domestic violence are the smallest. And children have a voice and they want to be heard, and it's our aim with this 10-year strategy to ensure that they are here, they're seen, we hear them, and actually we act for them. So the strategy is See, Hear, Act, and it comes exactly 1 year after a two-day conference we held in Stranmillets last year highlighting the impact of domestic violence on children and young people.
And is it possible, obviously, one child who's impacted, and that is one child too many, but is it possible to quantify the extent of it in somewhere like Northern Ireland? How do you measure something like that?
Absolutely. I mean, our refuges, we have 9 local women's aid groups across Northern Ireland. Last year, 485 children actually stayed in a refuge at some time during that year. And that is a child leaving its home and possibly its school to have to stay in a refuge with their mother due to domestic violence. And more importantly, Women's Aid have ensured that we try to support women within the home so they can maintain their tenancies and maintain some normality in their lives. And through that last year, the outreach support, there were 6,784 children supported through that service. So, you know, it is extensive. It is one child too many. It's actually 485 children too many. And that's why today we are here in Stormont highlighting this and highlighting that more needs to be done and more services and more funding needs to be put in place.
And Sarah, I'm not sure how busy Stormont is this morning. I know you've been sponsored by an MLA to have the launch there this morning. But obviously the issue we've been asking everybody, the question we've sadly had to ask everybody across the last 2 years is, what does the fact that Stormont's not up and running mean for this initiative? What can you realistically hope to achieve when we don't have a functioning executive and a functioning assembly?
Absolutely. There's no ministers to highlight the issue to, but what we can do is we can do what we're doing now, talk about this on radio, on TV, highlight and be the voices for those children, because just because there isn't a functioning government doesn't mean that these extreme social issues go away. They're still here. They can't be pushed to the background because other issues seem more important. This is extremely important and it should be a priority. I mean, we have a Children's Corporation Act that was brought in, so every government department has a responsibility towards children, and that's what we need to highlight.
Okay, Sarah Mason, the interim CEO of Women's Aid, thank you. I know, Sarah, that you've got some people, and obviously the best way for people to understand the impact of that is with personal stories, and you have someone with you there. Luke Hart, I think, is going to speak to us, and Luke's personal experience.
We have Luke and Ryan Hart are brothers, and they are with us today. This is their first visit to Northern Ireland. We're thrilled that they are sharing their painful experience to highlight the impact of domestic violence in children and young people, and it's best for them to tell their own story. So I'm going to pass you through to Luke Hart now.
Please, sir,
thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you very much, sir, and good luck with the initiative. That's Sarah Mason, the interim CEO of Women's Aid. Luke, how are you doing? Thanks very much for joining us this morning on U105, and thank you for making the time to come across for this event. Sadly, Luke, yourself and Ryan, your brother, have got a very personal experience of this very issue. You lost your mother and your sister to domestic violence.
Yeah, that's right. We've grown up with it, I suppose, and never even knew what it was. So for 26 years, we've lived under a father who was very, very controlling, but he wasn't violent. So we didn't see it as domestic abuse. But as we got older and older and older, he limited our lives more and more and more, but particularly our mothers. And once Ryan and I started to work, we saved up enough money and actually moved our mum and our sister out of the family home when our father was at work one day. And it was only 5 days later, actually, that our father then met them at a swimming pool with a sawn-off shotgun, and he shot our mother and our 19-year-old sister Charlotte at that point.
And the impact of that, and just listening to you tell that story in that factual sense doesn't come anywhere near describing the emotion that yourself and your brother and the emotions and you must have gone through since the event, but also in the build-up to it as well. As you say, you didn't maybe view it in the initial stages as domestic abuse.
No, that's right. And I think when we were growing up, we just took it all as normal. So our father would create all kinds of excuses. So for example, he would always say we didn't have enough money to for fuel to go and see friends, or for our mother to go and have coffee or meals with her colleagues or whatever. Like, he would always find a kind of economic excuse why we couldn't do things. And then he would create rules why this couldn't happen, or we had to do this, that and the other, to make us feel like we were always doing stuff wrong, that we were always guilty, we were always accountable for everything that happened. So we never really knew it was abuse. We never really looked at him and saw the problem. We always looked at ourselves. So when we were growing up, we sort of were very confused, I suppose, by the environment, because we thought we were just doing stuff wrong all the time. But it was only as Ryan and I got older that we realized, as we left the family home, that things could be better. And I think that gave us hope, actually, when we went to university and we started to get our own jobs. But meanwhile, our sister, Charlotte, was 6 years younger than Ryan and I. So she was still at home with our mother, and we saw them both struggling a lot. And actually, we realized that things could be better. And actually, I think we all started to get hope. And actually, in those days before and after moving our mum and sister out, we actually felt, I suppose we felt freedom for the first time, really. And actually, we actually felt really, really happy, because we felt that our father would be happier. He was always miserable. We always knew him as a miserable man, very angry, and we thought that we made him angry because we thought we were the ones who were making the mistakes at home. So we thought he'd be happy, we could be happy, and at last everything would be fine. But in the police investigation after the murders, they found out that our father had actually been writing drafts of his murder note that he left behind for months before we'd even planned to move out.
Gosh.
So our father actually was planning to, well, he was intending to kill all of us, but when we weren't even aware of it. So he was writing his murder note basically when we were sat on the couch next to him. And I think that we didn't really understand our emotions because we didn't really understand the environment that we were growing up in. And afterwards, after the murders, we were just, I suppose we were just struck down with just so much confusion and grief at the same time.
And obviously, look, that's something that yourself and Ryan have had to deal with through the years and in the past enough time since that incident in the summer of 2016, never mind all that had gone before that as the two of you grew up. But if you could leave the people listening now, and if you could deliver one message to those who are listening today in Northern Ireland as part of this initiative, what would you say to people about what needs to be done to tackle the issue, whether with a perpetrator or whether with those, if I excuse the term, who are the victims?
Yeah. So I think people will, I mean, today we'll be talking about children. I think if we had have been asked questions and able to explain what was going on at home, people would have realised that things weren't normal. And I think if people ask the children don't lie. Children say things as they are, and we all know that. And I think that children, if you ask them, are very, very happy to tell you about these things. And actually, it was much more traumatic for us not to be able to talk about what was going on at home, not to be understood, than it would be to talk about it. And I think that we think acknowledging things like domestic abuse will harm children. But I think actually it's the alternative. By not talking about it, we cause so much more damage. So I'd encourage people just to make domestic abuse part of ordinary conversation, because we'd never, ever heard about it.
Okay, Luke, thank you very much, and pass on our thanks to Ryan as well and to Sarah. Thank you for making the time to speak to us today, for coming across, and hopefully the use of this platform has allowed an opportunity for you to spread that message. And we hope that if anyone is listening today and anyone is impacted currently or historically by those issues, then they will pick up the phone, they will ask for help, and they will contact an organisation like Women's Aid. Luke, thank you very much for your time this morning.